Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, we want to thank our new patrons. Shelley Furio-Graham, Commander Data, Stephanie Parker, Tiffany Az, Lauren Blevins, and Dave Manley. Thank you guys so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. And if you want to hear your name immortalized in audio, or if you'd like access to other perks like ad-free episodes, exclusive merch, or over 4 years of Patreon-exclusive stories, then you should check us out on Patreon too. Just click the link in the show notes to learn more. Before we get to the story, we'd like to recommend a show that we think you'll love. Side Character Quest is an anthology of improvised fantasy adventures. In each short quest, the show's host will take a guest player on a journey through a larger shared world. Stay tuned after the story for a trailer for Side Character Quest, and check the show notes for a link to subscribe. And without further ado, today's story is The Most Dangerous Side Hustle by Merlina McGovern. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. Why in the hell had I signed that waiver? John hadn't wanted to go, and I didn't listen to him. And now, oh God. I stopped to catch my breath, and I slumped down into a patch of dark, wet leaves, gingerly shifting the weight off of my sprained ankle. There was vomit, not mine, and some blood, mine, at the tip of my shoe, and I gagged. I couldn't hear anybody. I must have outrun them for now. Who knows how long before they start the chase again? I've seen what they do, no matter what rights they think you've signed away. There is no way in hell that what they're doing there is legal. Reagan's head was turning in circles, and her mother was wailing, "Oh God," on the TV as they desperately tried to exorcise the devil from her. John and I sat smushed together on the sagging couch, our all-day Halloween movie marathon in full swing. The couch was red and ratty. We'd had it for at least 15 years. Everything in our tiny apartment was old and worn out, just like us. John's warmth felt good on my side, though this really wasn't how I thought things would work out when I first met him. I'd been in my adventurous post-college era, and I'd gone with some friends to a dive bar. It was attached to a hotel that used to be a brothel, but it was a classy joint now. You could tell because the rooms weren't numbered. Instead, they had names like Peggy and Ethel. Blood-red carpeting on the stairs led up to a narrow hallway with old Victorian rooms filled with dust-covered knickknacks and heavy brown furniture. The rooms weren't particularly clean, and I studiously ignored the yellowing stains on some of the bedsheets. But then my eyes found John, and suddenly, he was all I could see. He was wearing wrinkled khaki pants, a flannel long-sleeve shirt, and a baseball cap. His big brown eyes were tender and focused only on me. We drank gin and tonics out of mason jars, smoked weed under the shadow of a giant stuffed polar bear, and played poker all night. When my eyes got dry and bloodshot, John wandered the midnight hotel halls searching for bottled water and eye drops. And that's the kind of chivalry that can make a gal fall in love. These days, he works a boring corporate job as a middle manager, and I struggle to make ends meet as a freelance writer. I take any and all clients, which usually leaves me writing dry financial case studies for boring corporate brands and the odd restaurant review for local magazines. But that day, as we both scrolled through our laptops, I saw a new freelance job offer online. It was a request to review, with a plus one, a new haunted house. I paused and read the offer more closely.
Want to get paid to experience extreme horror? We'll pay you $1,000 to stay the night and help us get the word out about Murder Mansion. This ain't no weak-ass, no-touch haunted house. This is the real deal. The mansion is in the middle of nowhere, where no one can hear you scream and scream and scream. And we promise every visitor a bloody good time. If you think you can handle the terror, the torture, send us your resume and we'll call if we think you're the right fit. And if you're not the right fit, we'll just saw off your feet and hands until you do fit.
I could almost hear the vaudevillian villain laugh in the advertisement sign-off. He was probably twirling his oiled mustache as he wrote it. I love horror movies, and Halloween is my favorite time of year. So $1,000 for one night seemed like a pretty good deal to me. So I called up the number in the ad. The phone rang, and rang, and rang. No voicemail? Who on earth didn't have voicemail in this day and age? I was just about to hang up when an out-of-breath voice finally answered.
Yeah, what is it?
An exasperated voice asked. I was so surprised that someone had picked up the phone that it took me a moment to answer. I'm calling to answer your ad about the murder mansion. I could hear sawing and other high-pitched noises in the background. Construction? Was this thing even done? Finally, the bored voice answered.
Oh, yeah. What's your email address?
I was starting to have serious doubts. I mean, what kind of interview is this? With so many people out of work, there were tons of job scams out there. But I played along and gave him my email address.
Interesting. You have a beautiful name.
Thank you.
You ever worked in film?
He asked conversationally.
No,
I replied, and I couldn't keep the suspicion out of my voice. He didn't seem to notice or care and moved briskly on.
So I'm going to send you the deets about the job. My name's Betts, Phil Betts. You stay one night in the murder mansion.
His delivery was almost comical.
And then you write your experience and blog about it. We want this experience to grow, you know, organically, through word of mouth. So we're not really looking to get this published in high-profile magazines.
I guess that made sense. But the pay rate seemed so absurdly high. Could I really be the only one who had applied so far? The voice, Betts, was still droning on.
And I'm gonna send along a waiver for you to sign.
That made me pause. Oh? Here we go, I thought. This must be why he sounded so eager. What kind of bullshit legalese was he going to have me sign?
It's standard. Don't worry. It's kind of like an amusement park, but it's fucking scary, so we don't want you to keel over and have a heart attack and sue us, okay?
I guess that didn't seem too out of the ordinary. Anyway, what was the harm in getting more info? I could always just say no. I heard another squealing sound in the background, and then a tremendous crash.
So, I'll get that email off in a bit. I gotta go.
And he hung up. I read the email to myself in the same way I read the ad.
The Murder Mansion is an experience in extreme terror. This is a full contact haunted house. Nothing is off limits. As you stumble your way through our bloody corridors, you'll meet escapees from local insane asylums, serial killers, mad scientists, deviant doctors, torturers, and so much more. As an extreme experience, prepare yourself for physical contact, tight corridors, claustrophobic experiences, blackout dark rooms, realistic settings, and physical restraints. Murder Mansion.
The email was full of pictures of costume characters and bloody face paint, all reaching toward the camera. Physical restraints and physical contact didn't really scare me. I'd been to so many haunted houses, and they all promised to scare you more than you've ever been scared in your life. The Tower of Torture, Fear Factory, Maniac Mans. The more warnings they could fit onto their posters with dripping gothic font, the better. They all promised to scare you to death. I'd also been to a few full-contact haunted houses, and they always seemed a bit cheap in the scare design department to me. These things always got so crowded, and it never really got that scary since there was always a gaggle of stone teenage kids giggling right behind you, waiting for their turn to be scared. The final paragraph detailed what was expected of the job.
Your job is simply to have fun. Experience Murder Mansion and write about it. Publish it to your blog. After publishing, notify us and submit an invoice, and we'll offer up payment of $1,000.
Well, sounds easy enough. I clicked on the attached document. This must be the waiver. I was expecting quite a few pages of legalese, but it was just a single page. It wasn't printed in any kind of template. Just center-aligned text repeating the bullet points listed in the ad. The only addition was a single line. You agree to enter the Murder Mansion at your own risk. By accepting this job, you waive all right to sue for any bodily harm that may occur as a natural result of the haunted house experience. And that was it. I wasn't a lawyer, but I did know that most amusement park tickets waived the same types of things. It was one night, and John would come with me. We could definitely use that $1,000. I signed the waiver and sent the email back saying that I'd accepted the job. Come on, John. You have to go with me. I can't go alone. Plus, you love haunted houses. Please? John barely looked up from his phone, but I could tell by his pursed lips that he was irritated. Saturday was his monthly day with the guys. They were headed up to a casino for some gambling and drinks, and he wanted no part of this haunted house scheme. Looking back, I regret convincing him to come. John began scrolling faster, more aggressively.
Please, 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 pretty please.
John, you know me. I'm not going to stop until you say yes. He grunted and rolled his eyes.
Fine, yes, I'll go, but you owe me.
One corner of his mouth lifted a tiny bit as he added,
You owe me big time.
I snuggled up next to him and whispered,
Oh yeah? And what exactly am I gonna owe you?
He smirked, putting his phone down and pulling me close. On the road, we were arguing again. The directions that Betts had emailed after I signed the waiver were detailed, and our GPS appeared to be taking us in the right direction. But the road we ended up on was slowly devolving into a pothole-ridden mess. Lampposts were few and far between, and the ones that remained had a 50-50 chance of actually working, instead of just flickering off and on. Houses alongside of the road had trickled off to nothing. I was sure we were going in the right direction, but now we were bouncing along stretches of empty fields with near zero lighting. I spotted something red off to the side of the road.
What's that?
I don't know. Hey, pull over.
What? Why?
I rolled my eyes.
John, just pull over.
I don't know why I was so insistent. Maybe I was just looking for some kind of proof that where we were going was actually legit. I wanted to make sure. He slowed the car down, and the wheels slowly crunched over gravel and then dirt as he pulled over to the side. I got out of the car to inspect the item I'd seen. It was a pair of red satin high heel pumps, brand new shoes tossed over to the side of the road. As I looked at them, something reflective caught my eye. I turned and saw what seemed to be a small lens hidden under a bush. A camera? What the hell? I backed up slightly, not sure if I was in the camera's view. It was twilight, so not fully dark. I peered deeper into the fields that lined the road, but I couldn't see anything except for the shoes and the camera. I felt something turn over in my stomach. I don't know why, but seeing these brand new shoes just sitting there with no owner, it didn't feel good to me. I can't think of an explanation for why they were there, or why there was a camera looking on. I could hear John revving the car engine. I pulled out my phone and snapped a photo. Maybe something for the blog post.
What are you doing? Let's go.
I jogged back to the car.
So, what was it?
I don't know, just some shoes. I guess it was nothing.
John still seemed kind of annoyed. He floored it and raced to our final stop, jarring my teeth with his driving. We rounded a bend before pulling up to a curved dirt road leading us to the front steps of an old building. There was only darkness all around it. No neighbors. Just an abandoned building. A perfect location for a haunted house. The red brick facade looked like the front of an abandoned factory. Stone steps marched up to heavy black doors, and blank-eye windows winked across the first, second, and third floors. Brick arches curved over each window, some of which had tattered awnings. Most of the windows had all been either boarded up or had curtains pulled tightly closed. A plastic sign held up by ropes swayed over the black entrance. Murder Mansion. Enter at your own risk. A single security camera sat atop the main doors. The building looked empty. I guess I hadn't really thought about the fact that we were the first visitors to the haunted house. The whole point of us being here was to build a word-of-mouth following. And that definitely upped the creep factor. It seemed weirdly cheap and transitory, like those pop-up Halloween superstores that sprouted up like mushrooms right before Halloween. I looked for more cars, but there were none. if we were the only ones here, then why were those shoes abandoned in the road? I got out of the car and ran after John, who was already striding up to the front doors. Despite his griping, he was a huge fan of haunted houses too. So I guess he couldn't be that annoyed with me. My hands were cold, and I grabbed his.
So, where's this dude that hired you?
I'm not sure,
I replied as I looked around.
I'm actually not sure where we're supposed to go. He just gave me the address and said to come on by. Honestly, it sounded like chaos in the background then, too. Maybe it's some kind of behind-the-scenes tour.
At that exact moment, a loud creak shot out, and one of the black doors slowly opened inward. Well, that must be our invitation to go in. We walked over the threshold. The foyer was dark, but not pitch black. It was cold. I heard a brief whirring noise, and I looked up. A small camera up on the crown molding in the corner had turned to follow our entrance. Off to the side was a darkened, dust-covered parlor. It had a tea set perched on top of a fragile-looking coffee table. It looked almost like an empty movie set. I noticed dark blotches and stains on the walls. I shivered. The floor was sticky. I tried to scuff my shoes, but whatever was on the floor was thick and viscous. And it also stank. My stomach dropped as I heard a door slam above us. There was no music, no canned sounds of moaning or screams, just silence. And then we heard bare footsteps running across a hallway upstairs. Maybe the main event wasn't down here on the first floor. Maybe it was up there. John was already heading to the central staircase, leading from the first to the second floor. As I followed him, I heard a zip and a buzz as a fat fly flew past my ear. I flicked my head instinctively away from the fly and felt another one smack into my cheek. Gross. Why were there so many flies in here? Somewhere, a radio turned on, and the heavy sounds of high-pitched, distorted guitars began to screech in the background. My heart was racing from the sudden blast of noise. I ran to catch up to John, and I grabbed his hand again, holding on tight as we walked up the stairs. Mist from a dry ice machine began billowing down the hall and slipping slowly down the top steps. I could feel the moist tendrils wrapping around my feet. The mist was so thick that I couldn't see the ground anymore. For a moment, I felt disconnected with the world. Then, I noticed another camera, and it was tracking our movement along the hallway. Was someone watching us? A loud scream thumped to the rhythm of a bass guitar. The wail was piercing and blood-curdling. I clutched John's hand a little tighter. There weren't any instructions, but there didn't seem to be anywhere to go but forward. This haunted house seemed to be set up so that as you walked down the long hallway, different doors would open up onto different scenarios. The first one wasn't too original. A demented asylum room with padded walls and an inmate strapped to a chair. Apparently, he was in for a bout of electroshock therapy, and a metal helmet encased his head. Wires strewn like streamers flowed from the helmet up to the ceiling. The inmate was clearly a cheap mannequin, with straw-like hair smushed flat by the helmet. One of the mannequin's hands had fallen off, and I could see the metal bars that were supposed to hold it on had rusted through. The mannequin jolted from side to side mechanically, and his plastic eyes rolled around in their sockets.
Wow, this is pretty cheap.
I nodded in agreement. The $1,000 payment was starting to make some sense. The owners must know that they weren't ready for Halloween, and so they were using me to drum up sales. Well, they had another thing coming. I may write SEO clickbaity articles for pennies, but damn it, I had some integrity left. Another scream drifted toward us from somewhere up ahead. And the pitch and the fear sounded real, not recorded. Okay, I thought, here's where things are going to get really scary. Or at least I hoped they would. So far, nothing I'd seen was worth writing about. The scream fell off into a low and grunting moan. It was punctuated by sharp intakes of breath. And then, it started rising again. Soon, the scream was piercing through the hallway, and it sounded truly horrified. I grabbed for John's hand, but he had already gone forward and was turning left into the next room down the hall. I ran after him, but by the time I'd gotten to the room, the door had slammed shut behind him. I grabbed for the doorknob, but it was covered in something sticky. A sickly wave of vomit smell hit my nose, and I stifled a gag reflex, frantically rubbing my hand on my pants. What the hell? I started banging on the door.
John? John!
I screamed his name as I slammed my fist against the door. I could hear struggling on the other side, and then John called out for me.
Ellie, I'm okay, but listen to me. I'm strapped into some kind of chair. I need you to get the door open.
I started looking frantically around me. Is this part of the experience? Is this what they meant by extreme? If so, it was zero fun. This was terrifying. Suddenly, I heard thumping and then a large crash in the room. John started yelling for me again.
Ellie, please, please, God, you have to hurry.
My mind was blank. I couldn't think. The door was locked. What the fuck was I supposed to do? I stumbled back to the room with the electrified mannequin. I needed something heavy. But what? The only thing I could think of was the metal helmet on the dummy. I grabbed at it, but it wouldn't come off, and I could hear John starting to yell louder. And then, he screamed.
No! No! Stop!
My blood went cold. Without thinking, I wrenched the entire head off of the dummy and ran back to the room that John was trapped in. I started smashing the head of the dummy on the door handle. First one eye and then the second popped out, clattering to the floor. The head and the metal helmet warped as I smashed it over and over again on the door handle. Fake blood ran out of the eye sockets. I was crying now, tears and snot running down my face. Finally, the door handle popped off and fell to the ground, and the door swung open. John was strapped to a chair in the corner of the room. glow-in-the-dark graffiti was hastily spray-painted across the walls. If anything, this room was even more lazily decorated than the previous one. There was no theme, just broken furniture, packing boxes, and dark splotches splashed across the walls and the floor. But the room stank, a mix of dirt and weeks-old trash. I looked at John. His head was bleeding. Someone had slashed at his head with a knife. What the fuck? This wasn't extreme. This was attempted murder.
Ellie, you've got to get me out of this chair. Whoever's here, they're going to come back. Please.
The only thing I could think of was to use the metal rod sticking out from the bottom of the mannequin's head to try and break the straps holding John to the chair. I pushed one of the rods through a strap, and then I braced myself against the wall to pull. The strap fell away, and my arms whipped up as I stumbled back. What? The straps weren't even on that tightly. John was shaking. I reached down to comfort him, but then he lifted his head up and started laughing. I had no idea what the hell was going on, but he was laughing so hard he couldn't breathe.
What the fuck, John? This isn't funny!
It took him a while to stop laughing. Eventually, he managed to calm himself down enough to speak.
I know. Look, I know. It was just a joke. I'm fine. Look, the guy that emailed you, he emailed me too. He brought me in on the plan. He said it was just part of the Murder Mansion experience, you know? Something different. God, you should have seen your face.
I slapped him. Hard.
You son of a bitch. That wasn't even funny.
Oh, come on.
He whined, rubbing at the red mark on his face, smearing the fake blood. His brow was furrowed, and his dark eyes were full of hurt.
Come on, you have to admit it. You were scared. I mean, isn't that why you came?
When I could finally catch my breath, I realized he was right. But this didn't feel right. It felt like a betrayal. It's not funny when you're the only one not in on the gag.
There was vomit on the door. This isn't just some joke.
Ellie, I'm sure that it was made to smell that way. Look, Beth said that it would be super scary, super realistic, but that it was all just a show.
I was scared. And this is a haunted house. But all of this felt dirty. I looked up as I heard a whirring. Another camera. I pointed up to it.
We are being fucking watched. I've seen these cameras all over this place. Something is not right about this deal. I'm leaving.
John called after me. His voice was strangely quiet.
Ellie, we have to finish this. You're not going to throw away $1,000, are you? We need it. Pay freezes at my job. There's layoffs. You're not exactly pulling in the big bucks, you know. We have to hustle. Things aren't looking great for us financially.
I could hear the desperation and accusation in his voice. Yeah, I was freelancing after my own layoff, and money wasn't good. I had sent out hundreds of job applications, only to be met with total silence. We were fighting nonstop about money. But what were we willing to do for more money? Not this, right? But John went on.
He said that he'd pay me an extra $1,000 if I played along. $2,000 for a night of fake scares? How could we say no to that?
I struggled to contain my anger and frustration. He was right. But why did he have to tell me this now? Now that we were desperate? That's not a good place to be. I was so tired and so disappointed.
I just can't believe you didn't tell me, John. I just can't believe you didn't tell me.
Before I could continue, the whine of distorted guitars ratcheted up. The sound was almost deafening. And now there was an added bass to the music. My heart thumped in rhythm to it. And it felt like my body was betraying me, throbbing to the beat of the music. Both John and I held our hands to our ears. We stepped out into the hallway, and someone rushed past me, pushing me into the wall as they ran ahead. A woman. A woman wearing a red dress, torn to shreds. She was barefoot, bleeding bloody footprints on the carpeted floor. She was whispering, "Oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God," and she didn't even seem to notice us standing there. She just kept running. I called after her, but it was too late. She ran as fast as she could and crashed through the window at the end of the hallway. There was a sickening thunk of something hitting the concrete below. John gasped and grabbed my hand. I didn't pull away. There was no way she could have survived that jump. John seemed to read my thoughts.
I'm sure this is all part of the show. I bet there's some kind of mattress or trampoline down there.
But when he looked at me, there was genuine fear in his eyes. We both knew that we had heard a body smashed to the ground below. It was then that I noticed another camera right above the window.
We need to get out of here, now.
I dragged at his hand and turned around, but it was too late. We heard the revving up of a chainsaw. A sound that would have been normal in any other haunted house was causing bile to rise up in my throat.
Look, we're on the second floor. Maybe we can climb out the window at the end of the hall.
Are you insane? You just saw that woman, right? We can't leave that way. We need to get into one of these other rooms. Let's go.
He wasn't waiting for me. He dropped my hand and had already started opening one of the other doors toward the end of the hall. It wasn't budging. I started towards him, and the chainsaw sound revved up again, and we could hear that whoever had it was making their way up the stairs. John put his shoulder to the door and shoved with all his weight. When he did, a thick cloud of flies billowed out from the room. John's eyes opened wide with terror. I was right behind him, and I saw the bloody leg, bent at an awful angle, pushed up against the door, refusing to let it open any further. John gagged and then vomited. I didn't think. I just started running. I was halfway down the hall before I looked back. John was still in shock. I ran back to him. I kneeled down and wiped his face. Then I grabbed his chin and I made him look at me.
John, you have to get up. Now.
I grabbed his hand and pulled him up. Ahead, wearing a dark mask, appeared at the top of the steps. Slowly, it rose, coming up towards us. I dragged John to the end of the hall. I looked out of the window, and briefly, I saw the woman smashed on the ground below. I looked away. Just below us, and to the left, there was an awning. We could swing to that and then hop the rest of the way down.
Okay, John, you go first. Then you can catch me if I have to let go.
John was a zombie, still in shock, but he nodded. He used his elbow to knock the glass shards off of the windowsill. Then he climbed through. My blood froze. I didn't dare look back. I started to climb through the window. I heard heavy footsteps in the hall, jogging towards me. My calf scraped against the broken glass. I screamed and let go. John caught me, but I slipped through his grip and my foot twisted on the woman's bloody wrist. Sharp pain ripped through my ankle.
Ellie, we have to go.
I didn't have the breath to speak. I started limping as fast as I could. The man wasn't yet outside, but I could hear the chainsaw revving on the first floor. I could feel John falter beside me, and he pressed the car keys into my hands.
What are you doing?
I grabbed the keys without thinking.
John, what are you doing?
He didn't answer me. He just pushed me into the dark woods surrounding the house. I tried to protest, but he cut me off.
I love you, Ellie. Run.
It was the last thing he said. And then he ran toward the crazed man with a chainsaw, who had just made his way out of the murder mansion. I squeezed my eyes closed and took a deep breath. And then I started hobbling deeper and deeper into the forest. When I finally made it to our car, I drove as fast as I could, putting as much distance between me and the murder mansion as possible. When I got home, I called the cops. It was Halloween season, and it took a lot of convincing to get them to investigate. Eventually, they did go down to where I described the murder mansion. But they didn't find anything. Absolutely nothing. It was just an abandoned building, surprisingly clean, but empty. John's body was nowhere to be found. No body, no murder. Only a missing persons report. And he was an adult. He could be anywhere. And the cops asked me, just how good was our relationship anyway? I didn't know what to think. My mind kept going over the nightmare and the cameras. John's warm brown eyes looking into mine as he made his final decision. Was someone paying to watch this murder? Why had I even answered that sketchy job ad in the first place? I was desperate. That's why. I hope no one else gets caught by that job offer, desperate as I was to make a quick buck. A few weeks later, a check for $2,000 did come in the mail. I hadn't written anything, but still, the check came. In fact, I never published a single word online ever again. Now, I work a dead-end job, cleaning toilets for rich people. And I keep to myself most days. And I try not to think of that horrible night. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been The Most Dangerous Side Hustle, written by Merlina McGovern, narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. John was Ian Epperson. Betts was Josiah O. Knight. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Stay tuned after the credits to hear more about Side Character Quest, a fantasy adventure anthology that we think you're going to love. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Michael Vasquez, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Delta Tango, Chantel Payne, Nick, Stephanie Klinger, Jake R., Abigail Perez, and Emily Toll. Thank you so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. And you can find that in the show notes, too.
Bridget Freeman has lured you to a remote location.
Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to hear the trailer for Side Character Quest. You can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, and we've got a link in the show notes. We'll see you soon.
This world is a peaceful one. Plains, mountains, swamps, pines, cicadas sing, rivers flow, magic thrums through the air, and all of it's surrounded by a single massive wall, as ancient as history itself. So, you know, not that ancient. Thanks to the loss, prehistoric ain't all that long ago. Oh well, life is good, assuming you don't mind the looming threat of a mysterious skeletal society.
Side Character Quest, a D&D adventure, one player at a time.
Some worlds need a hero. This one? Might need a bit more than that.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.